It's 88.5 KCSN, and we really are pumped up about guests in the studio today. I'm going to read something that one of them wrote on his blog, and I thought it was an apropos intro to our interview. If Tom Waits, The National, Afghan Whigs, Bon Iver, and Nick Cave made a record with Percy Sledge, they'd be called The Horrible Crows. But in fact, The Horrible Crows are Brian Fallon and Ian Perkins, and they join us at KCSN today. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
All right. Last night, you played your first West Coast date, and actually, I guess your second official show, right?
Yep.
And, you know, the bloggers are going crazy. There's been a real buzz around it. How'd the show feel last night? Was it the West Coast welcome that you'd have expected?
Yeah, it was pretty comfortable last night. That was a lot easier than the other show.
Yeah. It's dream come true.
Well, and it's a room that is set up for just the kind of appearance that you were making. Everything about it's conducive to. And as you... sometimes the New York crowds, they can be tough.
Yeah.
Usually the L.A. crowds, it's an earlier show. Everybody wants to get to bed earlier. It all works out great. This record, Elsie, we joked earlier. We won't get into the one part we joked about. But the reviews, not to patronize, have been just sensational.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. And we thought, you know, doing the record, we weren't sure what people would think. It was the first record that we did just kind of, you know, for ourselves. And, you know, people say that all the time, but we actually did that and didn't really think about what people would think of it. So it was very good to see that, you know, it was comforting to find that people were accepting of it and that they liked it.
And you know, I'm assuming, and I've read some of the things that you discussed, both on your online blog and in other interviews, that you've been building a band that's fast becoming, I don't want to go as far as iconic, but it certainly is getting a rabid fan base in Gaslight Anthem. Mm-hmm. And as it's starting to hit an apex of sorts, I'm sure there is a lot of consternation on your part of, okay, we're going to do something different now. Are those fans going to embrace it? And are we going to find new fans? And it seems, at least in the earliest goes, that they're marching right along with you.
It seems that way. Which is pretty flattering. I mean, we weren't sure, you know, when we started this out. I think it was an odd thing, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. But that's your thing. It's not like you stopped one to do another.
Right.
They're going along side by side, so it's not like people are pulled away or.
Yeah, it's not like the other bands no more.
Yeah, right, yeah. Because of this band, it's still going strong. So, like, hadn't really thought about that.
Help me out, because I hate cliches, and I refuse to denigrate, you know, an album that is as special and as unique as Elsie is by saying this is a side project. What do you say when you're referring to The Horrible Crows?
It's the other band.
Okay, the other band. All right.
It's like we're Mormons with our musical taste. polygamists in our band banter.
Okay, I've so watched, this is your polygamy. Yeah. You're doing a little polygamy now, and you have another.
Yeah, I've watched.
I assume you're the other wife.
Yeah.
Okay, there.
Well, I have four wives now. Look at that.
That's true.
How does that work?
That's a good place to be.
That's a lot of work though, because I don't know if I could do that. I watched a show on that, and it's difficult. Seems difficult.
Well, it is creating a different. Identity, a different thought process, obviously different chemistry amongst players and different context of song. So yeah, that's, you know, wearing a lot of hats and trying to adopt, you know, different sensibilities with each outgoing. And yeah, you're right, that would be tiring. I know a couple of people that have done things like that, and We had one in Warren Haynes, who I think he's in every band that plays at Bonnaroo, pretty much. And Warren, I said, how do you? And he goes, well, there was one year the Grateful Dead asked me to play their tour. And I looked at my calendar. I said, you know, I really can't. And then I said to myself, wait a minute, how the hell do I turn down the Grateful Dead?
Yeah.
So I squeezed it into my calendar. I'm going, that's a busy guy when he'll squeeze the Grateful Dead in. You referred personally, Brian, because I don't like to go on other references that people say. I'd rather hear it from you. There's been a lot of talk about this album, and it always is this way, you know, with the other bands, that people are referring to it as intimate, personal. You refer to it as the darker side of soul music.
Yeah.
And it has a lot to do, it's largely set in relationships, both the bitter and sweet parts of those relationships. Tell me a little bit about it as you went into the Crows, both you and Ian, you know, you came together in the Gaslight Anthem backdrop. You started to realize you liked working with each other and playing with each other. How did the concept of the songs and the Horrible Crows come together in your heads?
We were talking about records that we would listen to every morning. We would, you know, we would go to sleep listening to records, and then that was kind of it, right?
Yeah. We're not really party people, so when everyone else is doing that, we sort of have an early night, listen to records, and then like just ask each other what, you know, what records you listen to, or music fans, that's what they do, you know, like what's the new record I've got to get. And we found out that we like both the like records we'd be listening to are things that we would listen to, so we thought, oh, why not just put that together and see if we can make one of our own, you know, that we would give someone else. So
yeah, there's not a lot of extracurricular activities to do if you don't do drugs and you're happily married. It's leads to a boring life on the road.
Yeah.
So we just kind of trade records back and forth and started writing songs, and we kind of said, oh, well, maybe we could do something like this, you know, or, you know, we kind of made playlists too for each other, and we were kind of like, what about a song like this, you know, and it was cool.
And there are, and you know, you talked about, and you know, certainly when you gave that, the concept of if all those artists were to form a band, I'm proud to say that is our playlist here at KCSN, so we're good there.
Very good.
I hear the textures, and I hear different things than certainly people come to expect from Gaslight Anthem. You still hear the passion. Right. That's one thing I don't think, you know, I don't think you're capable of writing music that isn't, you know, almost evangelical.
Yeah, I try to dig deep.
And I think you've succeeded. Let's talk about some of the songs on the record. In performance, what have been a couple that have, you know, you've seen the, you know, A, you're feeling them live. You've only done two gigs, so it obviously is early in that process. And B, what did the fans seem to respond to most organically?
Lady Killer goes off really well. That's a really big one. I think that song in particular, it resonates, I think, with a lot of people, because everyone's had that where that could be, I think, a guy or a girl singing that. And a lot of the times, sometimes I mix up the the
gender.
The gender, actually, right. Yeah. Between where I'll write a lot of songs where, you know, my upbringing was very, you know, like car guys working on cars, you know, houses. But yet somehow, you know, I had a lot of relations to like my mother's side of raising me. So there's a lot of men thinking things that would normally be attributed to a woman, and women attributed to men, and vice versa. And it's just like, it's all blurred in the positionals, you know? And I think that song in particular, it allows someone to take it and kind of be from either side, where no one's really the villain or the hero, but they're both kind of suffering from the event.
And there's been, you know, a number of the songs deal with you know, one of the most timeless sources of material for music, Love Lost, Love right. Failed. And I dare say, you don't sugarcoat it in these songs.
No.
directly, somewhat directly, you know, I know I saw you talked about a relationship at 18, at 21, and now your current relationship.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that the current relationship is the ones with the promise.
With the hope, yeah.
Yeah, okay,
the hope in it.
That's good.
They all kind of stumbled into each other. It was like this river that bled into, you know, and you carry around baggage, I think, from old experiences, no matter what they were, whether they're good or whether they're bad. And they all end up, at the end of the day, bleeding into one. And you, whatever has made you from your relationship experiences, that you carry into your final relationship, you know, when you get married and you know, have children and things like that. And but it's both of you, though, and you have to sort of sort through all that. And that's a lot of damage to sort through sometimes. You know, sometimes it's not. Sometimes you've had a good string. I didn't have a good string. You know, I had some, but I had some really bad ones. And the good ones aren't worth writing about. You know, they're not as interesting. So you pick the suffering.
So the la 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 part isn't really moon spoon in June isn't really gonna work its way into your lexicon.
Moon rivers. You know, we'll save that for somebody else.
Well, I've been married 25 years, so when we get off mic, I'll give you, you know, some of that, how you get to 25 years. And you're right. It's never easy.
No.
And that's true. I mean, but the great thing about, you know, chronicling, if you will, 18, 21, and now, let's face, what is rock and roll about? About that kind of angst and that kind of pain and hope. And you're picking the ages in which there's a lot of tender hearts out there.
Yeah, I believe so. Adele's making a career out of it.
Yeah.
19, 21.
Right.
She knows what I'm talking about. So yeah, she knows exactly what I'm talking about. Those are the suffering years.
Right.
Adele, you hit 27, you'll be fine.
Okay, there you have it. So we will now tell Adele that we expect her album 27 to be nothing about the rich deepness of the soulmate.
It'll be you. Yeah, it'll be the "You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman." That's the time. You know, the suffering comes first, and then the redemption. And you know, she's a classy lady. She'll be fine.
Yeah, she's definitely you know, she's authentic, and that's something that this band, you know, the whole idea. Before I get into that, I want to address Ian. You know, you start out working with Gaslight Anthem. Obviously, a relationship forms, and it seems like, with great intention, that Brian said this is going to be a chance for you to shine and become. And everything I've read so far and the camaraderie I see between, he seems to really relish the opportunity to let you, and he always points out, we're a band. It's got to feel great, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Very nice. Very nice. It's like winning the lottery, really, you know, I think. But I'm a lucky boy.
Your mother put me up to it.
Oh, was that
my
it?
Mom, yeah, she wouldn't.
You did it for Mom?
Rosemary Perkins.
She's a saint.
She's a tough sell.
So she basically said, take care of me, boy.
No,
she,
not at all.
She said, what's he going to do? He's got nothing. He can change guitar strings.
He's
going to
be the bin man.
Yeah.
I got a cape.
I can't even do that.
But so it's got to be exciting, right? To now be stepping out and having a band that's getting a lot of great buzz. And to be standing shoulder to shoulder and knowing you're making something special.
Oh, yeah. I just flew out. From where, like, I just live on a farm back home, so I've flown out to New York, to LA, to play shows in a radio station, you know, going from being in the background and changing strings and fixing amps or whatever to doing this side of things, you know. I didn't even know they did so much, to be honest, like with Gaslight. They go off and do, oh, we've got a radio session. I was like, oh, I get to have a lie-in, but... Those days are gone.
Yeah. Those days are gone. Wake up early.
Yeah, we call it around here, having been on the label side, as a act starts to get traction, and we were just talking about it the other day, we call it the year of hell. Because as you start to get things going, and the label cares about you, and media cares about you, yikes. It's like...
It's a tough sell, buddy.
Don't look at the itinerary.
Yeah, maybe it's getting...
Don't look at the itinerary.
I don't know.
I stopped looking at it a long time ago.
Yeah, you just got it. But it is usually a year of hell.
Yeah.
But the good news is all that time, real fans are being built. Yeah. The media stuff amplifies. What you felt last night, that's the real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently what you felt last night was great. And I, you know, I had a concern because I wasn't sure. You know, okay, Gaslight's got its fan base here. You know, clearly, you know, you because you're of the Northeast and from the Northeast, that's, you know, a real regional pride. I wanted to feel if Horrible Crows was going to have the resonance, and it did. You know, packed house, everybody going crazy.
Yeah, it worked out really well. We were just saying that kind of before we played. We were like, look at this, you know, go all the way across the country. People like it.
Yeah, and it speaks to a, you know, I know you got so much stuff going. I worked recently with Fistful of Mercy, and those are three guys that came together, and it was an organic, you know, union, and they did a small tour, and you could see as they were playing their shows, they knew they had something, and now they're going to come back and do something else, blocking the time and everything, saying, you know, what we did on stage was so special, we have to do this, we have to replicate it again. Because they had all figured, all right, we'll do 2 weeks, and that'll be that. And I get a sense the way this record feels and in the early reception to it, I'm going to have to start blocking the calendar out, my friends. It's not just going to be L.A. and New York that wants to see the Horrible Crows.
Might have to do some more.
Yeah, you know, but hey, if you love it, it's fun.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about, you said that the name of the band comes from a poem you read.
Yeah, a Scottish poem.
Tell the audience that they understand where the Horrible Crows comes from and what you were, why you chose that as the band name.
Well, it came from there's a poem called The Twa Corbies, and it's about these two crows that are kind of observing a knight who has passed away, and they're looking at all his you know, decorative armor and the medals that he has, and you know, discussing his wife that's probably at home, or his children, and the kind of the futility of it all to him now that he's gone. And that kind of struck me as a pretty good, you know, kind of, that's pretty real as far as the way people, you know, think of things, you know, and they have things that they focus on that once they're gone, it's gone. And it doesn't really mean anything. And that puts life into perspective, you know, a little bit in your finite, you know, sense of yourself and all that kind of thing, and that the world carries on without you. And it's a pretty, it's kind of depressing. But it was that, yeah, we didn't have any good choices for names either before that. So
we had a bunch of music before we had a name, so we wanted a name that was fitting, you know, to the music that we had. And that's not the easiest thing to... You know,
well, when so many of the songs do, you know, speak about heartbreak, struggle, those questions of, you know, and everyone knows that when your heart's broken at 18, it's the end of the world.
Yeah, completely.
You know, I've got a son who his first heartbreak, you know, I flash back to, oh yeah, I remember that, and I tried to console him.
Yeah, but there's no console.
And I realize it's futile. Yeah. I can tell him, you know, someday you won't remember her name. And he doesn't want to hear.
I might always remember her name.
You remember?
Oh, of course. Middle name too. Everything. You women have that thing over you.
Yeah, well, the first heartbreaks and the first whatevers. Yeah, they usually, you know, they last.
That's where you find the music.
My 20s were a blur. I gotta admit, I forget a lot.
Yeah.
Tom will account for that. Let's talk about other tracks on the records. Which ones, you know, we're playing Behold the Hurricane. And that was a great choice for a first single because it kind of, you know, it did have an anthemic, you know, feel to it that I guess, you know, we industry types might anticipate, you know, from you, Brian. But in listening to the whole record, I started to hear those textures and you know, really different styles. Some very understated songs, yet again, some very passionate songs. Which songs on the record at this moment in the early go are you feeling most proud of?
Oh, I still think that Hurricane is probably one of our favorites. That one. What do you think? What are the ones you most? I still like Last Rites. I love that one.
Yeah.
It's short and sweet.
I don't know. It changes for me. That like, for the live thing, it's different. Just listening to the record, like Sugar, definitely listening to the record. I'm extremely proud of that. But then live, I don't know. Hurricane's the one I always come back to, though. I'm like, that was the first one that we're, like, when we demoed it, we thought, oh, this demo sounded so cool. So we thought, oh, this is, you know, something to build on.
And build, but it does. I mean, it is a song that has a dynamic. You know, as I said to your label, you know, I literally, every time I played it on the air, each subsequent play, I'd find myself getting more and more and more engaged. And I think I shot off an email and I used graphic language to the effect of, man, this is a great record. You know, because it literally hit me, I don't know, fourth or fifth time where, you know, this thing is real.
Yeah.
And it got us excited. And the album hasn't disappointed. I mean, the album actually has, you know, really made me think there's going to be a lot of songs that we play on this radio station. And, you know, dare I say, you know, they're radio friendly. And that ain't the end all and be all. And I don't have to tell someone like yourselves who you've earned the fan trust first. And this radio and media thing, that's a nice amplification.
Yeah.
But it's really all about the fans. And to that end, was there ever a concern? Because I've known a few other artists similar, you know, with a, you know, somewhat similar backstory and ethos. They were in harder, you know, either punk or rock bands, and they, you know, Dallas Green comes to mind from City in Color and Alexis on Fire. And the question of, you know, can you go from a punk or a harder rock thing and then be vulnerable? And there was always the concerns of, all right, are those fans going to, you know, reject me or accept me? Did you have any of those concerns whatsoever? Did you just know that these are my personal songs? And
yeah, I don't really think about that kind of thing because you can't really be anybody else. But if you start doing that thing where you're worried about what people think of you, then you start kind of becoming an offering to them. And you can't do that because they don't consciously, you know, I feel, I'm not trying to belittle anything by saying they or, you know, but as a whole, your fan base, if you let it, can decide who you are as a person if you let that happen. And that, I think, is a dangerous thing because when you try to placate what you think people want, you lose the very thing that people liked you for in the beginning, was that what you were doing and your creative kind of output and the fact that you were putting yourself out there and being vulnerable. And I think that whether that's in a punk rock band or a metal band or whatever, you just have to do that. And, you know, nobody wants to hear somebody go out there and patronize them.
So for you, it remains what's true to the soul is what they're going to get. And you are, and you're right. The minute you start compromising and repeating and being, you know, into the niche they want, and certainly as the audiences grow and grow and expand, it becomes even more difficult.
Sure.
Because if you were to start to try to appease a mass audience, you then do become a mass commodity, and that pureness and individualism, it gets eradicated.
Right.
And it's something that, you know, let's face it, Dance With What Brung You. It is the passion, it's the zeal, you know, that you've brought to the fore that has captured everyone's attention and has got you a rabid fan base.
Right.
Well, I want to thank you guys for coming by and certainly, you know, doing the show for us, which, you know, it's going to be a document. And I recognize, you know, I was thinking about it. You can never make, I've been around long enough, I've made some bets on who's going to do what, and I've been right a few times, and, you know, I still have those 20 or 30 records. I go, what? Why? Why didn't this band make it? Why? How could it? Listen to this. They should have made it. But I got a feeling that we have a document now with this live concert that is going to be one of those bootleg things one of these days down the road where people are saying, this was when they first started. And we really appreciate you doing it for us, and we really appreciate you coming by. And we hope that we're going to see you again, not only live as the Horrible Crows, but certainly, you know, the next time's through in your many different incarnations, and that you know you have a friend right here at 88.5 KCSN.
Yeah, it is
the Horrible Crows. This is KCSN, and we thank you for listening. And remember, the album is entitled Elsie. And if you want to hear a record that what do those critics know, but they're all raving about, you want to get this record. It is a sensational record. And these guys come out to the great new music mecca of our day, Northridge, CA, to reach out to you. So how about you reach back and acknowledge it by getting a hold of Elsie. Thank you guys again for coming, and here's some music.